Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to yet another Brad and Body Podcast. How are you, Botty?
You always say that, yet another.
So I know, it's
any
another
minute
one.
We're going to be off the air.
We've got one more.
They don't stop. They just keep coming back. Yeah. Look, what a great round of NBL and WNBL. We'll get to talk to that about that in a minute. We've got a great guest, one of the icons of the former SEABL competition and the Victorian State League. But I'll let you do the intros. Go for it, Brad.
Yeah, thank you. No, he is, and again, another one that Boddy and I had in the basket that we'd wanted to speak to for a long time. Born, if I'm not mistaken, in Indiana and attended St. Mary's High School, or college, I should say, in California. He then relocated to Australia to pursue a professional career in Southeast Australian Basketball League. They now call that NBL1. It was CBA. But when you think of the superstars of this league, this was this man. He was an outright legend at the Ballarat Miners. He won, Boddy, I think it was like between that and State League, like five champions, a three-time championship, I should say, three-time MVP of the league. As I said, a couple of State League championship MVPs. He was amazing. Eric then made his debut, and I've given half the name away, but that's okay, then made his NBL debut playing for the Illawarra Hawks at the ripe old age of 35. He ended up playing 119 games. I had the privilege of playing against him in a CBA grand final in 1992, and then I got to play against him as well when he was playing for the mighty Illawarra Hawks and Wollongong, if I'm not mistaken. There was two names going on at that stage. He then moved into an assistant coaching role, and he was part of the furniture there for the Hawkies through all that time. He even took over as head coach for a little while, and a good mate of mine, I think, was his assistant, if I'm not mistaken, in Bruce Bolden. But he is an outright champion. He is the father of one current NBL player and a former NBL player in Dom and Xavier as well, and obviously has a beautiful daughter that's been playing basketball as over the years as well. So it's absolutely fantastic for me to introduce this man, legend of our sport, Eric Cooks. Eric, thank you for joining us, mate.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Eric. You know, I remember writing a long time ago, I'm going to start here, that I was amazed that it took so long for an NBL club to recognise what you could bring to it. I mean, you had been starring in the CBL for like better part of 10, 11 years, and to come in as a 35-year-old, was that daunting for you, or at that time did you think, well, it's about time?
Well, actually, I did have a couple of offers earlier. I chose not to go. I had a young family in Ballarat. I did really like Ballarat. I'm kind of that kind of person that sets my roots and make it home. So it was home for 11 years. And actually, Brendan Joyce, who coached me at Ballarat, persuaded me to follow him to Illawarra.
Unbelievable. I love hearing that. Now, just for our listeners, there would be a lot that do know you, but for some that didn't, I'm going to go back to 1992, and I'm a rookie, very raw, playing in the CBA, had guys like Mark Riddle and Jerry Everett who had come from the NBL, and I remember playing in a grand final against you, and obviously I'm going to say we won, and that was fantastic, but what I am going
to
say is I just remember our coach, Cliff Martin. Yeah, I just remember our coach, Cliff Martin. We shut Eric Cooks down. We can win this game. That's how good this guy was. Cookie, tell me about the time in Ballarat. It sounds amazing.
I mean, unfortunately, that was a bad year for us. Unfortunately, we lost the grand final. I think that was Al Westover's year coaching.
Yeah.
Al did a great job with us. He won a championship with us in 89. We ended up runner-up in 90, 91, and 92. We lost the grand final 3 years in a row. But a great, great year. I thought I had a great time there. A lot of good people. Al Wistel, obviously, is not only our coach, but he's the godfather of my daughter, Georgia. So we have really close ties there. So a lot of good friends that still to this day that I stay in contact with. And unfortunately, I lost a close friend recently in the last week that was a part of that time in Ballarat, Eric Lowe. He was there for, 10 of the 11 seasons I was there in Ballarat. And then I came here with him for another 8 or 9 years. And he passed away last week.
I did not know that. Yes. That is terrible to hear. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry.
It hit me kind of hard because I spent a lot of time, my roommate with him. He played on a team with me my first year in 1986. Brian Gordon was the coach. He was a player assistant coach at that time. And obviously I made a bond with him. He became our head coach in Ballarat for one season. I think we went to the grand final that year as well. Great guy. Very disappointing to hear that he passed away.
Terrible.
Yeah. So let's go back a little bit, Eric, into how did it come about that you leave the United States and come to Australia to play in Ballarat of all places? How did that all unfold?
Well, I played, like you mentioned before, at St. Mary's. I had some pretty good players I played there with. Brian Shaw was one that comes to mind, a couple other guys who got drafted and played in the league as well. But during my time at St. Mary's, I think my second year, 1982, we played against Loyola Marymount, and at that time they had a guy, Greg Gorgian, that was averaging close to 30 points a game.
Wow, Greg's a great man, yep.
And a hell of a player. So I played against him that year and went on to play my years at St. Mary's. And when I finished playing, I got a call from, ironically, his brother, Brian Gordon. And he was interested. He just got the job to coach Ballarat. It was his first coaching job. I was the first player he ever recruited. So I wasn't sure about coming to Australia at that time. I had just finished my senior year. I talked to Brian over the phone, still unsure. He showed up in San Francisco, and basically after talking to him, I was convinced that I wanted to follow this man wherever he was going. So I hopped on the plane. And,
I could just imagine, Cookie, mate, you got to come to Ballarat, mate. We're going to win this thing, brother. We're going to win this thing. I'm going to recruit. You're my man. I could just imagine the conversation.
Well, his dad, who I had still got a lot of respect for, Ed, was coaching Loyola Marymount at that time. He coached, I think, from 1980 to 85. And during my whole time at St. Mary's, I played against him. So when Brian came looking for a player, I think his dad recommended me. So I was grateful for that. And then once getting here, I actually lived with Brian off and on for the first 2 years that he coached Ballarat. So came very close, played a lot of dominoes and backgammon with the man. I won most of the games. But
that's probably because he was probably watching video and not even watching the backgammon.
He's distracted.
mainly talking the whole time. So he wasn't
be right. Yeah.
But I had a great time there.
At that time, though, when you were first approached, Eric, what did you know about Australia?
Back in 85, it wasn't a lot of, well, the internet wasn't even as big. Yep. So it wasn't a lot I knew about Australia at the time. I did have to, when he originally gave me the call, I was working at Pier 39 in Fisherman Wharf in San Francisco. And I was pretty happy with my job there in the sun and beautiful. And he rang me actually while I was on the boat that first day. So I was not too sure. So I had to actually go research about Australia and Ballarat. And when I first got to Ballarat, it wasn't, well, I mean, I guess I was expecting more of a city, more of a bigger city. So when I rolled in a Ballarat and tumbleweeds are coming down the road, I sort of a little bit second guessing my original desire to go overseas. But it was, like I said, I really enjoyed my time there. The first place they took me to was Sovereign Hill, which I thought was like downtown. that was a little bit worrying, but eventually I worked out that that was just a tourist attraction. So
I get told from a couple of my mates that have been to Ballarat and played there, they said, you know, they arrived there and someone says, come on, let's go and check out the city, and they're back in their room in 8 minutes. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, back then it was smaller, so it was only about three, but yeah.
Cookie, I think you've mentioned before, but what took you to Illawarra? How did it go from, and you said you had offers from other NBL teams, so what made you go, A, yep, I want to leave Ballarat, and B, why then?
I guess I didn't have the foresight to see the NBL being as big as it became. But in those earlier days, it wasn't as big a gap, I felt, between the two. As far as security, I felt I had a lot more security in Ballarat than the chase other rainbows. We're in, like I say, just starting a family. And that's the worst thing that I felt that I wanted to do was to drag my family around from city to city trying to make a living. So I felt that it was more important for me to set roots somewhere, at least while my kids was very young. So I chose to stay there. And then, like I say, Brendan Rack played for. We had won back-to-back championships in 94, 95. And he left in 96. So I stayed one more year. I think we won the state league the next year with Paul Hodgson as our coach. And then I came in 97.
And who was the coach in 97? Yeah, who was that? Was that Gordy?
Brendan. I came with Brendan, yes.
Well, oh, with Brendan. Sorry. Yes. Did he coach you that whole time you were in Wollongong, or was there a time, a year without him?
No. I played for him the whole time. I was his assistant. Through my first year was the year we won it back in 2000.
Right. And sorry. Until, okay.
2006 or 7 when he abruptly left, unfortunately. And that's when I took over as head coach.
Right. Okay. Sorry. I wasn't sure if you played for him the whole time, but there's that answer. Yeah. Good.
You've gone on to the staff as an assistant coach after your playing days. So did you have aspirations to coach? Because I was talking to Rob Beveridge prior to us doing this interview, or in touch with him, and he was saying you're one of the most knowledgeable people he knows in terms of understanding the game and being into basketball, like you're a real student of it. So did you have aspirations to coach? Because it seems like a natural
fit. Not originally. I mean, I was, 37, 38 years old. Obviously, my better playing days was behind me. Brendan gave me that opportunity to help him on the bench, and I jumped at the opportunity, which I'm glad I did. We obviously, my first year was obviously one of the greatest in the club history, the year we won the championship.
Yeah.
And so that was a good induction into sitting on the bench as a coach.
Yeah, that was those Damon Lowry free throws in the semifinal, wasn't it?
Yes, because that's when, that was Damon's first year with us. He's came, after playing with me in Ballarat, because he was part of a lot of our success in Ballarat, needless to say. I got injured. The one year I did, I think, miss out on the All-Star team was because I broke my hand in a game. And because of that, we recruited Damon while I was out. And that was probably one of the biggest moves the club's ever made, because I was already naturalized, but they were still playing me as an import.
Was he still as relaxed as he, like, when he was playing there? Look at him on commentary, mate. You feel like he's lying down. You know, I've had a bit to do with him, and it's hilarious. So relaxed. I'm actually enjoying his commentary.
It was more so as a player. He made some reference about taking his shoes off on the bench during the games. He's not joking. We would get up in some games with a fairly substantial lead, and he would take his shoes and socks off in the fourth quarter to let him know he wasn't planning on going back in. So he was very relaxed.
That's hilarious. I want to sort of take it down a different path, because I know we do get a lot of listeners that are parents that have got kids playing. And as a parent that has kids that have played at the highest level, I'd love to hear how you coped with that, raising children that is, you don't have to necessarily, I know what you're like, Cookie. It wouldn't have been, you have to play basketball. You would be whatever you want. I'll support you. How was that, raising kids that obviously have gone on to be at the top of the pinnacle?
Well, you're totally correct, Brad. I definitely chose, let them choose whatever sport they wanted to play. And ironically, most of them played multiple sports. Xavier played rugby league. He played soccer. He played baseball. He was actually very good at rugby league his first two seasons. He was the leading try scorer for the team and maybe even a competition. And that was just because at that younger level, because of his speed, he was able to run around the side.
Once
he started getting bigger and catching up with him, it was a different story. He knew that wasn't a sport for him.
This is the son that also mentioned on national TV that you were mediocre at best. Come on, what's going on there?
well, my wife always insisted that the kids have a backup plan if sports didn't work out. So I think his backup plan is a stand-up comedian. So he's practicing his lives live on air. So I commend him for at least thinking about his backup plan.
That was brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah.
I hope his first one works out because I don't think he'll make it.
You're really hoping he goes well in basketball is what you're saying.
Yes. Totally. But he's been pretty good. I mean, he's it's hard, obviously, when you're watching your kids play and not playing as well or doing things that you would prefer he did other things. But, I mean, that's part of life, and you live and learn as parents as well. But overall, I'm really happy that he's doing what he loves to do. And, I mean, Dominique, he played basketball for a long time, but he always knew that I think his line of work would be in the business world, which he's doing very well. At the moment, he just changed positions. He was with the company for about 6 years, Red Venture, which he really enjoyed, but he just took an opportunity to go to a different company, which is a big challenge for him.
Now, where is Dom? He's overseas, but where?
He's in Charlotte. He actually went to visit Xavier when he was at Winthrop in Charlotte. And Zave was in his senior year. He ended up getting a job there, and Zave came home and he stayed in Charlotte. He just bought a house in this last year, just got married. So he's obviously setting up roots to make it long term. And like I say, he just changed positions. He's with a company that's a media company called Group Black, and they're buying quite a few major media companies as well.
I guess I'm going to ask this, and I hope I'm right. You guys just seem like such a close family. Like, I see you at every Kings game, and for sorry, Illawarra Hawks fan, he wears Kings shirts all the time. God bless him.
Oh, right? No.
Yes, he does. God bless
Eric,
him. But you seem like you're just like such a family man, like such a close family. Would I be right?
I would like to think so. No,
yeah,
you are. My daughter is en route right now on her way home. She's just turned, I shouldn't say her age, but 29 2 days ago. So she's coming home to spend the day, and we'll go to Zane's game on Sunday. But Dominique came home for my daughter's wedding. He stayed for a month. So we do enjoy each other's company, and we try to be together as much as we can.
What about your own family background, Eric? Like when Brad mentioned that you started it, or you were born in Indiana, or your siblings?
A small town by American standards called Gary, Indiana. It became famous for the likes of Michael Jackson and the Jackson 5. Went to high school.
Not bad.
That my siblings went to school at. Later, we had the big dog, Glenn Robinson. He's from my high school. He played for my high school coach. But Gary was a very rough town, industrial town, similar to Wollongong. We had a U.S. Steel was based there. At one time, it was thriving, a lot of employment, a lot of jobs. The unemployment hit there very hard. I think this steelworks was employing somewhere about 70% of 500,000 population. Once they went down, crime got very, very prevalent everywhere. And it was a place that you probably wouldn't want to live. If you Google it now, it looks like a ghost town. It's it's really torn down. Most of it, when I was there, I think it was 7 or 8 high schools. Now it's 1.
Wow. Eric, I want to throw a question at you because I think you're one of the ones that can really give a really good answer. I'm a young kid and I'm looking at coming out of school or whatever it is, and I've got an offer. Do I go to college? Do I go to the institute? Do I stay my path through the NBL? What would your suggestion be that someone who's been here, seen the highs of lows of every sport, knows college, knows Australian program? What would you say to them?
It definitely depends on the individual and the circumstances that, surrounded him. I mean, for some kids, if you're as talented as Josh Giddey, I would suggest that you go to the next star program, go to the NBL and do exactly what he did. I mean, everybody, I don't we're created equal in some ways, in other ways we're not. If you're not as talented as that, I think college can be a great experience for you. It's somewhere where you can get, like my kids all got degrees. They played basketball, but Dominique did his master's as well during his 4 years. And Xavier did get his degree in communications as well. But I think that's a good pathway as well. But I really think that it depends on the individual and what opportunities you have in front of you.
Great answer. Great answer. Okay, it's that time of the pod. Now, what we love to do here, Eric, is we're going to throw some names at you, blast from the past, some of them. And all we're looking for is mediocre at best. No, I'm joking. All we're looking for is one word answers that just sums up that person. So it can be one word, an anecdote, a story, a line, whatever you want. And I'm going to start it off with Glenn Saddle.
Legend.
Beautiful.
Okay. Okay, and I'm going to follow it up with Matt Campbell.
Robin to the legend.
Robin's to Batman. I love that one. Yes, that's great. We've mentioned him a lot, but Brenna Joyce.
Passionate, hardworking, dedicated coach that another guy that's definitely a family man that, I mean, apart from basketball, I think that's the only thing that's more important to him is his family. But
yeah, great to hear.
Very passionate.
All right, we're talking coaches. Let's move to Rob Beveridge.
Very people orientated. I think he gets the most out of people because he truly cares about people, and I think he puts people's best interests in mind and in his heart, and I think sometimes even to his own detriment.
Yeah, good call. Yeah. Going with coaches, Gordy McLeod.
A friend. again, a legend, the backbone of the start of the Civil War basketball program. Obviously got Ty still here. And another person that lives and breathes basketball. And, I mean, he's no longer involved, but I'm pretty sure he would be fully aware of everything that's going on in the sport, and a great family man as well.
Beautiful.
All right. A little bit of a blast in the past, but not too far back. You've had some great guards through Illawarra. I mean, probably starting at Gordy as a local, but even through there's the Cairns Taipans these days seem to be able to always come up with a fantastic import guard. And while you were with the Hawks program, you guys did that as well. There was a number of them.
So many.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Darnell Mee for one.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was some, but the one I'm going to ask you about is a controversial one, and he wasn't, he didn't make himself controversial, circumstances did, and that's Rodney Clark.
I'm surprised that it's controversial. When you said that, I had a lot more names that could have came to mind.
No, it wasn't his fault.
Hang on. Sorry, Buddy's got another question. Can you tell us all those other names that you were thinking of?
Yeah, that's the next question.
So many more came to mind. People are right. But I thought that ever played in the NBA, and he wasn't the most athletic guy to ever play, but he had a good basketball mind. He was an outstanding shooter. Injuries to a degree slowed him down, I think, a little bit before his time, but a great player and a great guy. I'm surprised. I'm sorry, I might have missed that controversy.
It was at the actual awards night when he was named the MVP.
Oh, yeah.
James Ennis went and stormed outside and threw his All-Star 5 trophy in the brick. There was this minor controversy. Yeah. Rodney had nothing to do with it.
No. And I remember that well, and he laughed about that as well. And, I mean, arguably maybe he wasn't the best player, but, you know, at the end of the day, he got the award, and I don't think he was and he wasn't the kind of person that was conceited about it either. I mean,
no.
And, you know,
well, I can add to Rodney, right? I was commentating a lot in Wollongong in those years, man. He was a flat out baller. When he played well, you never lost. He was unbelievable. And I loved it because back then, if you got 100 points then there was burgers for everyone. And every time he hit that 100 points, he'd run back like he's eating a burger in his hand. It was hilarious. I loved it. And the whole crowd goes nuts. It's really cool.
Rodney was a great guy,
Fantastic.
Look, I've got a question for you, a quick one. Were you involved in that team with Bevo? I think you were, where you had Kirk Penny and you had Kevin Lish. It was like probably on paper the best-looking Illawarra Hawks team of all time. Did you feel that, or is it just no question it's the 2001 team?
That was Rob Beveridge's first season. He had Kurt and Lish and AJ came to the club that year as well. Obviously, it was very talented. Whether it was the most talented, that's hard to say, because some of the teams that maybe didn't even fare as well. The team that won it was very talented. I mean, Melvin Thomas he was a beast. He was quite a player. And we had guys that played every role. We had the Grant Kruger that was the meat and potatoes guy when things got rough, when we go to Perth and we need someone to stand up to the guys that Perth had at that time. And our guards was outstanding. Damon had a great year. Obviously, Glenn Seville was outstanding. Matt Campbell and our guard, can't think of his name now.
Charles Thomas
was outstanding. And Matt Garrison, ace.
Yes.
Another you had a ballers. Jeez, I forgot that team. Because Charles, didn't he end up going to Adelaide after that? Didn't he, Charles Thomas?
And Ace went to Cairns as well. And Ace won almost three championships back-to-back, because when he left us, he went to Adelaide and won a championship there, and then went to Cairns and might have made the finals there or came relatively close as well. But I thought that was a very talented team. So if I had to say a team, it probably would have been that 2000 one. Yeah.
And that was a team of destiny too, wasn't it? You guys sort of felt that it was around the Olympics time that you'd played some games against international teams. It was just really
Lithuania year. We played them very well. I think we came up short, but also we had a person that was close to the team that passed away that year during the year. Dave Leskey. He was our trainer. Yep. Actually, I was his roommate that whole year. He knew he was passing. He had cancer, but he wanted to be with us. He was still coming to training every day, even getting sick on the road, getting sick before training. But he still wanted to be there every day. And I think that sort of gave us the belief that if somebody wanted to be around us, it was important that we did the best we could do.
Team of destiny. Yeah, absolutely.
That was that win in Townsville. Just I remember it all. Absolutely great. And I'll tell you, that year was the best I've ever seen Saville play. He was unbelievable.
Outstanding. I mean, every series went to three games. We lost every game to, I think, Adelaide. Well, the three free throws with Damon, that arguably could have been the end of the whole dream right there. Mm-hmm. And then Perth, we got stumped in game two over there and had to come back. And even Townsville, we got stumped in game two over there and had to come back and play in Townsville game three. So,
You didn't do it easy. You did it the hard way, but you did.
Well, you know what? That's what means more. That's what it means more. Yeah. It means, like you said, destiny. Cookie, mate, we can't thank you enough. You are a legend of our sport. I've said it. And thank you. We really appreciate you coming onto this show. I look forward to seeing you at many more games because we're always around. And again, thank you for everything you've done, mate.
I'll be there with my Kings soon.
I'm so sad to hear that, Eric. Gee.
And I just heard all of Wollongong go mediocre at best.
Yes.
Saying that, though, Wollongong definitely my second team. If it wasn't for Zay playing for Sydney, I would definitely be wearing Hawks gear.
Oh, he's a good man, that Cookie. I like him a lot. And what a family man. I actually... did some commentary yesterday for the we're doing this on a Monday, obviously, for the Sydney Kings and Illawarra game, and we had Zave, his son, obviously, in the pregame, and I told him we had a little chat and just wanted to mention a couple little things, you know, mediocre at best and everything. He had a nice little smile. It was great. Boddy, let's talk WNBL and NBL. I'm going to give you the choice. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the NBL because, you know, fresh in our minds is the Sydney Kings getting out of jail against the Illawarra Hawks. That was phenomenal. Heartbreaking for the Hawks. Absolutely heartbreaking.
Man,
but
I tell you, they threw everything. They threw everything in the kitchen sink at them. Can I just say, Dave O'Hickey, this is a young kid. I actually played with Dave O on a social comp on Monday night as he was growing up. And you could always see he had it in him. Right. And yesterday was that breakout game. I look at that and go, well, that's not a shock because I've seen it so many times. It's just so nice that he could do that on the big stage. He was great last night. I really was proud of him.
Yep. Yep. And I felt the same for Kyron Galloway in his breakout game for the 36ers against New Zealand, which we'll probably get to too. So, we've got a little bit to talk about.
Can I just say, though, if you are Illawarra, like, guys, out of bounds play, switch everything.
Yeah.
The one play you just don't want to give up is the three. That's it. Yeah. Go to overtime if you had to.
And with all due respect, it wasn't a difficult play to defend.
No.
It was just a screen. It was just a screen. And Sean Bruce gets through to the corner, they pass it to him, he makes the shot.
I just imagine that video session. Oh, that's going to be gut-wrenching. And poor Timmy Conrad misses both free throws to put him, they're up two and misses both. Yeah. And it's just, I actually, Sydney Kings player and everything. I was gutted for Illawarra. I felt they deserved that. And actually, I was commentating yesterday, and as I was sort of coming to the booth to wrap it up, Chase Buford walked past me and he just said, we did not deserve that win. So I just felt really sorry for Illawarra.
Are you prepared to say that in court? Because I think the Hawks could take him to court and say, well, Chase has admitted they didn't deserve that win. Yeah. Get it taken off him. Yeah. Come on, let's go. Let's settle it out of court. I've seen a lot of social media photographs of Sean Bruce's toe. Whether it was on the line or not, and there's nothing conclusive in any photograph. If you're a Hawks fan, you're saying yeah, it's on. If you're a Kings fan, you're saying no, he's off. I'm saying this: Chris Reed, the referee, one of our top referees, standing about a meter off it, looking right at it, signals the three.
Yep.
That's it. That's the end of the story for me. Case closed.
Yeah.
All right.
I agree.
Let's talk about what's hot in the NBL.
When you're hot, you're hot. When you're not, you're not. Well, for me, I'm going to stay on this, the Sydney out of bounds play. Two times in 2 weeks. Well, 2 weeks we had the FIBA break, but two rounds. First one, Sean Bruce to Kuatnui, bang, hits the three. And this one, Angus Glover. You've got to give it to the Sydney Kings, man. They needed threes to win it, and they did it. Two fantastic out-of-bounds plays. I have watched that play from yesterday. As easy as you said it was to guard, and I don't disagree, it was still a very well-run out-of-bounds play. And credit to the Sydney Kings, because both of those passes from the baseline, Angus yesterday and Sean Bruce 2 weeks ago, they're really tough passes. In that time of the game as well. So I just thought, well done. Kudos to the Sydney Kings. Chase Buford, your out of bounds plays are outstanding.
Yep. Got to agree with you. Like I said, I don't think they're difficult to defend, but that's not to say that the execution wasn't perfection on both occasions. And again, let's take nothing off the passes, because Bruce's pass on the previous one and Glover's pass on this one were essential 100%. In making that work. So
yeah, pinpoint. Yep. Yeah.
Brilliant. All right,
my little hot one
is those New Zealand Breakers. Come on. Let's go.
Yeah.
They've gone down to Tasmania. Apparently they had to go via Alice Springs and then Broome. And, they were on flights all over the place and they were on the boat going across and it sank. They had so many things go wrong. They still got out of jail. And then they've gone back home to play Adelaide, who's sitting there waiting for them. And again, they've had to go, Christchurch or somewhere. They've zapped across to Hawaii. They got in at 3 a.m., as we were repeatedly told on the replay. And they get the win. I mean, they get the win. That's just fantastic. That bank shot.
Modi is doing a great job with his team. Yeah. I'm really, really liking him. From someone who was, a crazed man on the sidelines, I loved him last year as an assistant coach. He's just taken, mate, this team's 8-3, buddy. We're sitting here 11 games into the season. There is no way in the world we would have said they were 8 games winning.
No, but it is a slightly different team to what we've – it's not like it's the same Breakers team, is it?
True.
With, the exception of William McDowell White and Tom Abercrombie, maybe Rob Lowe.
Isaiah Liatha. Yeah. You're right. No, they're very good. But, you know, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Sydney's next game is up in Cairns, I think. And they're 8-2 with New Zealand being 8-3, mate. New Zealand can be on top here, equal, you know. So they're fabulous job. That's a good hot year.
We've got Cairns, New Zealand coming up soon too. There's some big games coming up, and again with teams that we didn't really rate as highly as we should have probably at the start of the season.
I'm just going to say one more thing though. I'm still not sure about Melbourne. That team is. I thought they were going to win on the weekend. I really did. I thought they were going to get that win. I don't know how they're going to do this, mate. They don't look right. The new import, I think he'll be okay. But, you know, gone are the days, Boddy. Do you remember, like, when new imports came in? I remember back in my era, right, and you would have been riding on all that. You bring an import in, that guy's playing. Yes, it was a 48-minute game, but that guy was playing 40, 42 minutes to get him into the swing of things, right? And some imports come out like a Bobby Locke. I can't remember. What was it, 50 in the game one? You know what I mean? Yeah,
off the lands plane. They drive him to Geelong.
Right. Yeah.
Gets changed. Doesn't even know the guy's names.
Yep. And has 50.
Goes out and gets 50.
Those days are gone, mate. Now it's like we'll bring him in and play 6 and 10 minutes and everything. So it's such a different game now. Not right or wrong. I'm just verbalizing that, right? But for Melbourne, something doesn't look right. The two imports, I'm not sure, you know, Xavier and the best import in the league. Exactly. Look, they're both very good players. They're both very, very, very good players. Just it doesn't seem right, the Melbourne United team. So anyway, just wanted to have that word.
I tipped that they'd lose both those games. I thought they'd lose the first one to Adelaide because there was all the emotion from the Isaac Humphreys coming out.
Well, I went the other way. I tipped them because of that. You're right, obviously, but I went the other way.
Yeah. Well, it was always going to be one or the other.
Thanks, Sherlock.
I know. I took ages to come up with that. No, but I mean, the mental fatigue of that, or the emotional fatigue of that. That there was either going to be that, or there was going to be this huge, you know, let's get out there and kick everybody's butt. Sort
and
of
that's
thing.
Where so, that's where I went with. I went that way purely on emotion and at home.
No, but because of the way he announced it within the group and everything, everyone was impacted. And I just thought, no, they're going to lose to Adelaide. And then I thought, well, now South East Melbourne will lose to Perth. And then they'll come back in. And that will be when Melbourne is trying to assimilate Marcus Lee into the team. So that again changes your dynamic.
Yeah,
and I thought,
I agree.
They'll drop both.
And now, I picked Phoenix to beat them. I did myself. Yeah. I thought that would happen. But I must admit, I thought they'd split the round 0-2. They're now 5-7, Boddy. But look, we also got to play a bit. You know, they've had some injuries. They've lost some amazing pieces over these last 2 years. You know, they are the team by far that has paid for success. You know, there's no question. You look at all these players that have gone on, and let's be honest, they've gone on to bigger and better things, right? You look at Della Vadova, you know, you look at the players that they've had, you know, Joala Cool and stuff like that. NBA. There's four players.
And then Huck Porter gets injured.
So let's just take five players. Mate, some would argue they're lucky to be 5-7. When you take that five out, right? So so we do have to certainly like put that up there. But, you know, Dean Vickerman's an outstanding coach, and I guess, you know, we just felt he would be better.
Yeah.
Not him. I thought them. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think you've got to factor in Chris Gordon didn't get younger in the offseason. Yeah. David Barlow didn't get younger. Brad Newley didn't get younger. You know what I mean? These guys are heading towards the back end of their careers. And,
well, they had to put all their faith, didn't they? Because they've had such good Australians. You can't keep getting them. Where are they? So they've had to put their faith in the imports and Hock Party, which that next star, because that's a huge – not only do you lose a great player, he's, in a sense, like picking up the Australian player with a next star. Do you know what I mean? Like you only get one of those and stuff like that. So because, you know, getting a good next star and three imports is four really good players. You add Chris Goulding into that. And unfortunately, it just hasn't worked out for them. But hey, things have seemed worse. You know, they're only 5-7. They're what, 3-4 wins off top spot or whatever, and anything can happen. So anyway, let's move on to the WNBA.
Just quickly, we haven't even mentioned Shay Lee missing games. Oh, Mason Tootling missing games.
Huge point.
Dean Vickerman's had it rough. Let's be fair. And okay, move on.
I will finish on that one. You're right. He is one of the best coaches in the league by far. WNBL, no, what got you?
No question. Well, let's start by what was hot.
Okay.
When you're hot,
you're hot.
When you're not, you're not. Okay, for me, it was Lauren Nicholson and the Fire to get Southside and basically from start to finish be on top. I thought Shannon Seabohm's job as a coach, he was brilliant.
Outcoached. He's really good, man. Like, I knew he was good. He's gone to another level.
Yeah, he completely outcoached Cheryl Chambers. I think Cheryl was totally reliant on her talent, simply overwhelming Townsville, and they didn't. They just need a few to have a bad night. They got some. They're definitely on the wrong end of some officiating. Some of that officiating was absolutely appalling, and that does mess with your head. Does mess with your equilibrium in terms of like, oh, the whistle's gone. What is the call going to be? Taking all that into account. I accept all that for the Flyers, but what Steph Reed was doing out there and the import Hawkins, Michaela Roof, you know, and then Lauren Nicholson, as I say, 25 points. She started off, she missed a few shots early. I thought, oh, she's going to have a bad night. Ends up having a great night, making some big shots. Very impressed with them. Tell me, there were a lot of great performances, so what's hot for you in the WNBL?
Mate, I couldn't split this. Penina Davidson, 9-9 from the field with 19 points, and Lauren Mansfield, 7-7 from the three-point line with 23 points for Adelaide. I could not split them, so I'm going with both body. Outstanding in two good wins for both of those ball clubs.
Yes, I honestly don't think we've ever seen a 7-7 in the WNBL history.
No,
from the three-point line. Not taking anything away from Panini. She was fabulous. But from the three-point line, I don't think we've ever seen that. We may have had a perfect game from just generally on the floor, but 7-7.
Can I just throw you something, buddy? Because you've watched WNBL from the start. I'm going to throw you just over, I'm going to read out like 10 quickly, winning scores. Not the actual scores, winning scores in the WNBL. 103, 87, 80, 86, 85, 104, 99, 105, 104. Have you ever seen the league scoring this much? I think it's awesome.
Yes, I agree with you. No, the answer is yes, I agree with you. No, I've never seen it like this before. And I still think, you know, this might be a long shot and a difficult connection for some to make, but I reckon that World Cup,
Having the
World Cup in Australia, having everybody watching it. If you're in any way engaged in the WNBL, you were watching the World Cup. And to watch that, you've got to be inspired. It makes you go out and shoot more. It makes you go out and practice more. It does. If you're an elite player and you see that and you go, well, I'm not far off that, or I'm playing in a league against those players, many of those players, I could be, if I just did the extra work, because I think some of the shooting, has been phenomenal. I mean, you just named it. You know, Penina Davidson, perfect from the floor. Lauren Mansfield, perfect from outside the three-point line. When do you see that? It's brilliant.
Well, Boddy and I, for everyone, we sit down and we go, all right, let's have a chat with who you're hot. We actually have to cross some off. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. We're not looking for one. We're like, well, she is. Who do we go with this week? So, no, absolutely fantastic. All right, come on, give me an odd nasty.
All right, my nasty is the fact that there's just so much that we take from the NBA that's not good, and a lot of that I'm talking about now is the carry on that players get up to. You know, like, you made a 3-point shot, okay, show us your three fingers, 3-point shot, or show us you got 3-point goggles, or show us your holstering, your magnificent hot shooting. Through that stuff is just bullshit to me. I'm sorry, it's bullshit. If Michael Jordan hit 6 3-pointers in a championship game for the Bulls against Portland, and all he does is just runs past the bench and sort of shrugs.
Magic Johnson looks at Magic in Magic was commentator. He looked at Magic. Yep. Yeah, I know exactly.
I don't know. Yeah. Okay, he's not running around going like, hey, look how fantastic I am. It's like you're doing the practice. I think Steph Curry's got a bit to answer for as far as this goes too. And now this is all leading me up to my real nasty is I thought Sean Bruce making that shot at the end of the game was a phenomenal finish. An amazing finish. It's terrible for Illawarra. But then for him to put his hands together and pretend that, oh, it puts you to sleep at the end of that, that was totally unnecessary. And if I'm an Illawarra player that's disappointed and is close and maybe I'm a bit fiery, I might have punched him in the face. Now, that might have been my reaction. I would have had to have dealt with that. It's like, you've done it, mate. You've done it. Enjoy it. Don't rub salt in the wound. Yeah, we saw it down in Tasmania. A little bit too much excitement, a little bit too much carry-on, too much flopping, and it ends up with a little bit of a kerfuffle at the end of the game. Gentlemen, act like adults. There you go. That's me. What's your Rosen Rattler?
Jeez, I can't follow that up very well. I'll tell you what, but my Rattler is, I'm still sitting here. I'm ready to punch someone, mate. I'm ready to go run through a brick wall. This is awesome. Look, my Rattler has got to go to someone who needs the love because he deserves it. Adam Ford from the Cairns Taipans.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Kudos to you, mate. You have been phenomenal. Here's a guy that was in Sydney. He's like, nah, I'm going up to Cairns. Didn't have a great year last year. Not him, the team, right? Obviously, there was a lot going on, but he now looks like he's done what he needs, what he wanted, and he is doing phenomenal. We all talk about it. How good is Keanu Pinder? Mate, he is in talk of MVP of the league. Then you get the three imports, Taj McCall, you've got DJ Hod and Scott. I'm loving those three imports. And I'm listening to Adam Ford on the sideline. He is in bat for his players. They love him. He loves them. And they had an interview with him on the weekend, Boddy, and he's like, you know, how do you get Taj back in? Because everyone's asking, now, you're better without him. And he looked at the camera and said, mate, I built this team around him. I built this team around him. We will be better with him. And I love that. That's backing your guy, not, oh, I'm going to give him 3 minutes and we'll see how we go. I think he is doing an outstanding job. They are sitting up high on the ladder, third, if I'm not mistaken. And it is a huge congratulations to him, loving what he's doing.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. Two of the steals that Keanu Pinder had were the most athletic steals I've seen in many, many a long day. Yep, I'm just hats off to him. He's been fabulous, and I'll put that down at 40 myself. All right, I think that's we're out? Have you got game or two you want to talk about for the coming round?
Nah, we'll get it next week. Let's go. Thank you to Burger Boss and Piranha Media. Thank you for everything. Yes, buddy.
The one thing, though, at the end of that game, at the end of the Sydney Kings game, you know what they did?
What?
There you go. That's this week's bit of music.
You said to me at the end of the last episode, that's it, I promise no more. Yeah. I thought you meant no more for the season.
No more for that episode. All right. Take it easy. Looking forward to this round.
I'm sorry, everyone. See you next time. Yeah. Hey, Boddy, did I ever tell you that I hit a game winner in the corner at the Kings one time on the 3-point line? Did you hear that? Did you know that?
No, I did not know.
Then the warm-ups bloody finished and we had to play the game.
Yeah. Isn't that how Shane Hill used to get a lot of assists? He used to count the ones in the warm-up.